had asked me to speak a little bit about some of the experiences that I've had over the last couple of weeks. As some of you might know, I was asked to be the rabbi in Camp Simcha both last year and this year. And that is an exhilarating experience. It's an amazing place to be. For anybody who doesn't know, Camp Simcha is a home where children with special needs or with cancer can come and feel comfortable and have an amazing time and spend 2 weeks forgetting about their illnesses. So as exhilarating as that is, and as uplifting and meaningful as it is to spend time with all of these young girls and boys and speak with them about all of their personal predicaments that they happen to be in, one of the very difficult times that we share there is trying to figure out how to make halachic protocols for a camp like this. We had this summer 128 campers there for 2 weeks. Each of them had extremely complicated situations. Many of them had very complicated machinery, and it was not an easy discussion at all to figure out how we were going to deal with many of the potential issues that can present themselves on Shabbos. As we know, on Shabbos, one is not allowed to do melacha. It's not easy to define exactly what is considered a melacha and what perhaps is not, but many of the things that require our attention for those who might be sick on Shabbos will require us to violate a melacha. Sometimes it means violating a biblical prohibition, an issur d'oraisa. Sometimes it means violating a rabbinic prohibition. But either way, there are many, many times which we find ourselves having to do something that we otherwise would not do on a regular Shabbos. So that's what I'd like to talk to you about today. And I think it's a fascinating discussion because it applies not only to Camp Simcha, it applies to all of our lives. Unfortunately, we're faced every so often with a chole, with a person who is sick, and it's something that we need to figure out how to deal with on Shabbos. So let us begin with a Gemara Maseches Yuma Daf Pehe. The Gemara tells us, you don't have to read it inside, but I have it here just for your own reference. The Gemara tells us that there were a number of great Torah personalities who were traveling together, a number of Tanaim, and they all turned to each other and asked the following interesting question. Minayin lepikuach nefesh shadocha es haShabbos. How do we know that when you're presented with the following conflict, you have somebody whose life is in jeopardy, but you also have the laws of Shabbos that need to be followed? So what should take precedence? What should a person do when you're faced with that dilemma? Should I violate the laws of Shabbos? Should I save the person's life? This is the question that they were all discussing amongst themselves, and a tremendous discussion ensued between all of them to try and figure out, do you want me to move? Would it be easier if I moved over? I should move this way? Okay. So a tremendous discussion ensued about how to figure out what the source in the Chumash actually is that one would be allowed to violate the laws of Shabbos in order to save a life. Now one has to ask themselves, if you just back up the question one little bit and you ask yourself, what are the prohibitions in the Torah that one is not allowed to violate, even if it means losing one's life for? So it's very famous that for almost all of the laws of the Torah, one would be allowed to violate, and one would have the obligation to violate the law of the Torah and not to give up our lives, except for the three major cardinal sins, which are Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, and Shvichas Damim, idol worship or promiscuity, or Shvichas Damim, going and murdering somebody else. Those are the three exceptions to the rule, but outside of that, we would assume that one has an obligation to violate the law of the Torah in order to save their own life. So one has to wonder, what kind of question were they bothered with here? How do we know that one is allowed to violate the laws of Shabbos in order to protect their own lives? Of course you're allowed to. The same way you're allowed to violate any other prohibition in the Torah. So take for example, we just commemorated Tisha B'Av, and we know we speak a lot on Tisha B'Av about the stories from the Holocaust. So we know there were many people who unfortunately had absolutely nothing to eat. They were starving. And the only option they had was once in a while to eat something that certainly was non-kosher food. Is it even a question that one is allowed to eat that kosher food? Certainly one would be allowed to do so. There would be no debate, no question about it. And yet, the Gemara here for some reason has a discussion, how do we know that you're allowed to violate the laws of Shabbos in order to save your own life? Why is that even up for discussion at all? And the answer to that is because we have another Gemara in Maseches Chulin, where the Gemara tells us that one who violates the laws of Shabbos, a mechalel Shabbos bifarhesia, somebody who violates the laws of Shabbos, is dino ka'akum. that person takes on a status in some way of being a non-Jew. Now that doesn't mean that now he has a right to intermarry and now he has a right to violate all the other laws of the Torah. It just means that for certain halachos, let's say we need to count a man for a minyan, this person perhaps will no longer count toward the minyan. Or, for example, you're not supposed to have a non-Jew handling the wine. So if this person handles the wine, that might pose a problem for us because he now has taken on a quasi-status of being a non-Jew. And that being the case, we would have to realize that Shabbos is in some way considered to be more prominent and more important, more significant than many of the other laws of the Torah. So much so that if somebody violates the laws of Shabbos, they have taken on a status of a non-Jew. And therefore the Gemara says, if that is the way we look at Shabbos, we have to now think, how do you know that one is allowed to violate the laws of Shabbos, even if it means that you might have to give up your life, but maybe Shabbos is more important. Maybe Shabbos would take precedence. And that's where the Gemara's discussion begins. And the Gemara comes to the final resolution, and that is, we learn this from the pasuk of V'chai Bahem, where God instructs us that we should live by the laws of the Torah, which means that God doesn't want us to die because of His Torah. He wants us to live because of His Torah. I have to say that I'm one of those people that when we share Holocaust stories on Tisha B'Av, it makes me very depressed. And as meaningful and inspiring as many of the stories are, I don't particularly appreciate all of them, because I find that we give off a message that this is what life is all about. And it's not correct. Obviously, we make time to highlight the incredible courage and the incredible gevura, the unbelievable strength and fortitude of these Jews who lived through terrible times like that. But what we want to give over to our children and the messages that we should be inculcating to the next generation is, that's not the way life is supposed to be. That's not what God wants from us. Yes, there are times in Jewish history that call for that, but what God wants from us really is v'chai b'hem, that we should enjoy the lives that we live, that we should appreciate the world that we inhabit, that we should have a full and complete meaningful experience of life, and we should never have to go and resort to those kinds of situations that the Jews unfortunately had to come to in some very difficult generations in the past. And this is something that I think the Gemara teaches us here. V'chai b'hem means you have an obligation to violate every law of the Torah in order to make sure that you are going to save your life. In fact, there is a discussion in the Rishonim. Do I have a right? Let's say one of those Jews in the Holocaust who was given non-kosher food and says to himself or herself, I don't want to eat the non-kosher food. I would prefer to give up my life. Not because that's what God wants of me, but because I just cannot imagine putting non-kosher food into my system. It's something I absolutely will not do. It's a red line I will not cross. Is that something that they have the right to volunteer, to say, I'm willing to give up my life for God, even though God doesn't ask for it? And this is a major dispute among the medieval commentators. The Rambam and the Rabbeinu Tam have a discussion. Do I even have a right to volunteer such a thing? Or do you say, Hanefashos lihena? God says, your lives are in my hands, and I made the rules. And the rules are, if this is not something that you're obligated to give up your life for, you don't have a right to give up your life for it either. So that is a major discussion that we need to think about as well, whether one has a right to volunteer something which perhaps would be dangerous to their health. Just yesterday, I got a question from someone who was in a camp, and he said that the camp got into a major dispute about whether or not they're allowed to go on a certain trip. So I said to him, what's the issue? And he said that the problem is that the camp arranged for them to go paintball shooting. And very often when one goes and engages in the act of paintball shooting, there are many times that somebody will get hurt and have black and blue marks and have chavala, as we refer to it. You will have some sort of residual bleeding because of the fun activity that you went to do. It doesn't take away from the fun, but you might walk away being bruised up. And that's a major question. Do we have a right to volunteer of ourselves and say, look, it's not life-threatening. Probably nobody ever died from paintball shooting. I don't know, but I would imagine. And the worst that's going to happen is you'll just get bruised up. But perhaps I don't even have a right to make that choice either. And that is something that we need to think about. After all, the pasuk says, Hanefashos lihena, our bodies, our souls, our lives are not completely in our hands. They're really in the hands of God. And if God gave us a healthy body and God gave us the opportunity to live life in a perfect way or in whatever way He's given it to us, who says that we have the right to damage that body in any way? And therefore, this was the dispute that broke out yesterday in camp, whether or not this activity should actually be done or perhaps it should not. My father, I spoke to him yesterday and he felt that it's inappropriate. He doesn't think that it's proper to go on these kinds of trips when one knows from the outset that it might cause some very serious damage to your body, even though it means just black and blues here and there, but it's something one needs to think about very carefully. So the Shulchan Aruch, following what our Gemara says, the Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Shin Chav Ches in Aruch Chaim, that if somebody has a sick person in their home, and it happens to be a Shabbos on which that person needs to be tended to, writes the Shulchan Aruch, mitzvah lechalel alav es haShabbos. Not only do I have a right to violate the laws of Shabbos to take care of this person, but mitzvah lechalel alav es haShabbos. I have an obligation, and that is actually my mitzvah. That's what God wants of me to do, to take care of that person and to violate the laws of Shabbos if that's what is necessary. So much so that the Shulchan Aruch then qualifies that statement and says, what if I happen not to be a medical professional? I'm not in the medical field. I don't know if we have doctors in the room. But let's say something presents itself. I see an accident that happens in the street, and I think that it's life-threatening. I think it's dangerous. I happen not to know, but that's what I think. My understanding of the situation is such that I need to get in my car and drive that person to the hospital. Says the Shulchan Aruch, I get to the hospital and the doctors are laughing at me. You didn't have to come in. Come on, this is not so serious. This is not such a big deal. It could have waited till after Shabbos. All you needed was a little Band-Aid. And I went because I thought with sincerity that this really was something that was necessary. Says the Shulchan Aruch, even if it turns out that it wasn't a life-threatening illness, and even if it turns out that it was not necessary for me to violate the Shabbos, I still do not have to do any tshuva for that. I am considered to be somebody who's doing the right thing. And even though retroactively it turns out that it may not have been the right thing and it may not have been necessary, the Shulchan Aruch says, there is no problem at all and I get schar, I get reward for doing that which I thought was a life-saving activity. So take, for example, the following question. It comes up every so often. You have the following scenario. There is an accident on Shabbos, God forbid, and the first thing that we do when there's an accident is we call the Hatzela in our neighborhood. So we call Hatzela and the dispatcher sends out a couple of messengers of God to come and take care of us who get sick. And the Hatzela member rushes to the scene. He gets to the scene and he notices that... Please give him. We took care of it, really. Give him, he's a rabbi from out of town. So the Hatzela members show up on the scene and they realize that they have it under control. But it just so happens to be that we dispatched another couple of members who are on their way driving to the scene. Now, they don't know that everything's already under control and that their help is not necessary. The ones who are already there know that we have this under control. Nobody else needs to come. So here's the scenario. I have two options in front of me. I am the member that's on the scene. I'm already there, and I took care of it already. I can either get on my radio, get on my cell phone, and call the other people and tell them, we've got this under control, stop your cars wherever you are, and no need to drive any further. Option one. Option two is, I just allow them to come. By the time they get here, they'll see on their own that there's no reason for them to be here, and they'll turn around and go home. What should I do? This is a major question. What should a person do in a situation like that? What? I'm sorry? The second choice. Why would you choose the second choice? You're making people drive on Shabbos more than they have to. But they're driving more now because of me. So there are many who feel, very correct, there are many who feel there's no reason for me to get on my cell phone to call them. That would mean I'm doing a violation of Shabbos. By them driving to the scene, and at the current state, they believe that they are doing the right thing, and they believe they are saving a life. They don't know what the situation is, but they believe that they are actually involved in life-saving activities. We assume they would not have any punishment. They would not have any problem for what they did, because they thought they were doing the right thing. They thought they were involved in life-saving activities. And therefore, perhaps there are those who argue, there's no reason to call them back. Now, one point to consider, and I know that this is a point that we need to think about, is maybe if you allow the Hatzela members to be available to go somewhere else, they're going to be available to help somebody else. So obviously the case that we're describing is where you have an overwhelming number of members with you, and you don't have to be concerned for that point that's being raised. Yes. Thank you. I've been waiting to take a drink.
Go right ahead. maybe that brings up another question.
Yes.
What obligation do we have to help or assist making sure that somebody else doesn't do an avera?
That's a very good question. What obligation do I have to look out for others and make sure that they don't violate an avera? That is a totally separate shiur, not just a totally separate shiur. That would take a couple of months to get through that issue. It certainly, we have a mitzvah in the Torah of Hocheach Tochiach Es Amisecha. If you believe that someone will sincerely listen to that which you are educating them, so you really have an obligation to make sure that you stop people as much as possible. Now, if you know you're dealing with the kind of person that just will disregard that which you are saying, so then you don't really have the obligation to stop them. So that's a very complicated discussion. What are the rules of that question and what perhaps are not? Yes?
The real question is, forgetting about whether you're allowed to stop them, once they get there, could they go back home?
That's an excellent question. Once they get to the scene, are they allowed to get home? And this is a general question we need to think about. Once we get to a situation, let's say you bring someone to the hospital, now do you have a right to bring them to drive yourself home or not? So the Gemara has in Maseches Beitza a very interesting discussion. The Gemara has the concept that we refer to as Hitiru Sofan Mishum Tchilasa. Once again, Hitiru Sofan Mishum Tchilasan. There are times in which we will allow you to violate something because we understand that if we don't, then next time around something worse might happen. Something of that nature. So say, for example, I'm a member of Hatzalah. I'm a paramedic. And Shabbos morning, I get a call, 8 o'clock in the morning. I jump out of bed, I go on the call. I bring the person to the hospital, I do my job faithfully. Now what? Now you're going to tell me I'm stuck in the hospital the rest of Shabbos. I have 6, 7 children at home and a wife that's waiting for me. Happens to be I'm making a Sheva Brachas this week for my daughter who just got married. And now I have to miss the whole Shabbos and I have to stay in the hospital with the patient that I'm not even looking after. I'm just standing around in the lobby doing nothing. Is that something that would make me encouraged next time around to go on the call? Or perhaps you'll say, next time around I'll just ignore it and say, let someone else go. Well, this is a major concern. This is a major concern that we need to think about. And the Gemara raises this issue. Should we say that because we have to worry that next time around I'm going to be discouraged from doing the act that I should be doing, maybe now that would allow me to violate the law in front of me itself? That's the question that is raised in the Gemara. And it's a major point of discussion. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein speaks about it, and Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And this is a very big question. How do we deal with this in the proper way? How do we allow somebody to come back, and how do we do it in a way that is violating the least amount of Shabbos as possible? I'll tell you, when you go to a place like Camp Simcha, it's a amazing experience, but it's a difficult experience as well. I'll tell you why. You have 128 campers, which means you have probably 250 staff members at least, maybe 300 staff members. So we have a lot of staff there. And never in their lives have they violated the laws of Shabbos for anything. Even the nurses, it's like a mini hospital that they have there, or it's a major hospital. We have paramedics and nurses and doctors and specialists and physical therapists and all kinds of medical professionals who are all there working as a team, all as volunteers. It's an amazing enterprise to be a part of this. But I have to say, and I have given a shout out in the past, and I would say it once again, and I'll say it many times over, for all those in our community or in any community who send their children to be the selfless and dedicated volunteers who go to work with children like that, or to Camp Hask, or any other place like that, where we see our children doing things that I could tell you myself I would never have the wherewithal to do on my own. And I'm so impressed, and I can tell you I am so proud to come away from an experience like that, meeting the nurses and the doctors who volunteer of their time from our community, the counselors, so many of them from our community, 12th grade girls, girls who are 20, 21, young women, but they give of themselves in such an incredibly selfless way. It's what to be proud of. And you know, you look around the world and you hear so many horrible stories about people saying, what's going to be with the youth and all the drug problems and all the issues. And I agree, all these problems are problems. And I agree that we have to face all of them. But let's not be so down on ourselves. Let's once in a while pat ourselves on the back and say, we have amazing youth that are coming out of our communities. And look what they're doing. They're engaged in activities that 50 years ago none of us would have done. Or maybe we would have, but many others out there in the street perhaps would not have found it within themselves to do it. And it's an amazing testament to where our community is and to the future of where the community is going. I think there's a lot to be proud of, and we have a bright Jewish future when we think about how lucky we are to have children and grandchildren and members of our community who act in such ways and who do such incredible acts of kindness when they have time off in the summer. It's amazing. And just give yourself a chance to be proud of it and to be very, very high on yourself for how lucky we are to have those kinds of members in our community. So as we mentioned, the Shulchan Aruch writes, when you have a life-saving activity that needs to be done on Shabbos, we absolutely need to violate the Shabbos in order to do so. And as I said, it's very hard when you have 250 staff members who have never violated the laws of Shabbos in their lives, and suddenly they come to camp, and you have to slowly educate them how to take care of their campers. And you have to teach them that, yes, when your child needs the feeding tube turned on in the middle of the night, you're going to have to turn that machine on Shabbos. And when it means you're going to have to press all kinds of buttons, that's what you're going to have to do. And when you have somebody who wakes up choking on their saliva in the middle of the night, and you need to turn on the nebulizer, and you need to fill it up with water, and you have to violate the real malacha on Shabbos of bishul, of heating up water. How many of us would ever take a pot of water from the sink on Shabbos and put it onto a fire? I would imagine no one in this room. But yet on Shabbos there, we have many campers who need that done for them every week, pouring water from the tap into the machine, turning it on, doing all kinds of activities. There are ways to do it, but we need to educate people that this is your mitzvah. You should be proud about the fact that you have an opportunity to observe Shabbos in this way. It's not something to be sad about. It's something to be proud of. I'm jealous of all those Hatzalah members who every Shabbos go and spend their Shabbosos doing the things that they do and being involved in life-saving activities, doing mitzvahs that I never have the opportunity to do. I once had the chance to do it. Last year there was a tremendous medical emergency in Camp Simcha in the middle of Shabbos, and I realized on my own, you know, the Rambam says, he makes a comment, when you have to violate the laws of Shabbos to save a life, the Rambam says, you shouldn't go looking for the non-Jew and you shouldn't go looking for everybody else. He says it should be done al yidei hagedolim. He says it should be done by the leaders of the community. They are the ones that should do it. And last year, I remember while I was in camp, there was a tremendous medical emergency off campus and we needed to take care of it. And I realized that there was tremendous hesitation by some of the staff members to jump into a car and go. And as the rabbi, I went in the car myself and I told them, let's fill the car and let's go and take care of what we need to do. And this was something that allowed others to be able to do it. Once they saw that I was comfortable doing it, that's what was necessary to get them to do it as well and to be the responsible adults that they had to be at that moment. And this is something that we need to think about. It's hard for people to get used to that reality that sometimes you need to drive on Shabbos and sometimes you need to be mechallel Shabbos, so to speak, in order to take care of the life. But that really is what is expected of us, and that is something that we need to think about. Yes, question in the back.
It's the youngest member.
Okay, yes. I would like to shift the discussion a little bit away from Shabbos for now and think about the following circumstance. Every so often you have a situation where a person, I just got a call last week before Tisha B'Av from many, many people in our community who are not well, who are undergoing chemo, who are undergoing all kinds of treatments and they have to take medications. And they need to know how they should observe themselves, how they should conduct themselves on Tisha B'Av or on Yom Kippur. And somebody last week gave me a call that they were undergoing chemotherapy and they said their last treatment is going to be the week of Yom Kippur. And they asked me, what should they do now for Tisha B'Av? And what should they do going forward for Yom Kippur? Tisha B'Av isn't even a question. Somebody who's undergoing chemo is considered to be a chola sheyesh bo sakana. There's no doubt about it. And this was something I advised that she absolutely should be eating, and there's no question she should be drinking, she should be conducting herself in the normal way that she otherwise would. Yom Kippur is a difficult question. Obviously, if somebody's life is in jeopardy, they need to eat on Yom Kippur, there's no doubt about it. And let me not go through this issue without raising the following point. My father often mentions this when he talks about this issue of fasting on Yom Kippur. He has shared it with us many times as family members, but he said he had a person who he knew who lived out somewhere in the Midwest whose wife was very sick and undergoing treatment. I don't know exactly what the illness was. And when it came before Yom Kippur, this person asked the doctors, is it a life-threatening problem? Is it a life-threatening illness? If she is going to, obviously she was in a life-threatening situation, but if she's going to fast for 25 hours, Will it perhaps precipitate her death? Will it hasten the death? Will it cause a major issue? And the doctors misunderstood the question. I'm not saying it was their fault. He probably didn't ask it properly. There was some miscommunication. He didn't explain that what he meant was, would it hasten her death? Not would she die on Yom Kippur, but would she die sooner than she was supposed to because she's fasting on Yom Kippur? The doctors understood the question to mean, will she die in the next 25 hours as a result of the fasting? And the doctor said, no. She'll last another couple of days, but it's totally unhealthy for her. In the end, she fasted on Yom Kippur because the doctors and the husband of this woman had a miscommunication, and she ended up losing her life a couple of days later. And it was a tremendous misunderstanding. And let us make clear, when we talk about a person not fasting on Yom Kippur because of pikuach nefesh, it doesn't mean, will they lose their life on Yom Kippur? The question is, will it be detrimental to their health even going forward? It doesn't mean on Yom Kippur per se, but even 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 3 months, or 3 years later. This is something that we need to think about very carefully, and when we ask a question to a doctor, we need to make sure to clarify that statement and make clear what exactly we are asking. So, there's a beautiful letter written in the Sefer Shem Mishmuel. The Shem Mishmuel was the son of the Avnei Nezer. He lived in the second half of the 1800s. Avnei Nezer was the undisputed Gadol HaDor in the 1800s. He was the undisputed genius of the generation. He was an amazing personality. And he had a son by the name of the Shem Mishmuel. And he writes a letter to his son-in-law. Unfortunately, he had a son-in-law who was not well 1 year when Yom Kippur came around. And the question was, what should I do? I'm not well. And now it comes Yom Kippur, and I'm not sure how I should conduct myself. And look at the letter that his father-in-law wrote to him. And I think it's worthy of us reading it together. So let's learn through it together. I think it's just so powerful, it's so beautiful, and it really gives us a context to try and understand what is our role on Shabbos as well, when we have the opportunity to care for someone who is sick on Shabbos. It's the same as somebody who is sick on Yom Kippur and has to eat as well. Let's read what he writes. Kasher Yom HaKippur Mimash Meshuba, this is the third entry on the sheet. When Yom Kippur is coming closer, Hineni Lahazhircha Miyod, I am begging of you, I implore you, Lebal Titzdak Harbe B'Dvar Hatzom, please do not try to be such a righteous person. Please do not try to fast. You are not obligated to fast. You are not allowed to fast, he tells him. Ukufi Asher Yomer Lecha HaDoktor Kein Tishmar La'asos, whatever the medical professionals tell you to do, that is what you absolutely need to do. Im Yomru, if they will say, Shaddai Pachos Mikashir, if they tell you that it's good enough for you to go through the day of Yom Kippur eating very minimal amounts at a time, that's what you should do. Ah, however, Im Yomru, Shagamze Lo Yaspik, if they tell you that you cannot just take small dosages along the day, you need to actually eat like your normal routine of eating, Chalila Lechala Hachmir, you don't have a right to be stringent. You don't have a right to make the choice of fasting. Why? And listen carefully how he frames this. Kimi Shatsiva Lotso Miyom HaKippurim. The same God that instructed all of us as Jews to fast on Yom Kippur, Tziva L'shmoa L'rofe V'shalo Lotso. He is the same God that has instructed us as well that when you're in these kinds of dire conditions, you absolutely are not allowed to fast. Ve'al tachshov she'ein lahatir ela l'chola she'yesh bo sakana l'shaito. Don't think that it means only if you're going to die on Yom Kippur. But he says, chalila, that's a mistake. Ela afila l'svek sveka. Even if you think that there's a remote possibility that you might endanger your life by fasting on Yom Kippur, you have no right to do so. And therefore he warns his son-in-law, do not try and go against that which the doctors instruct you. Skip down to the three dots in which he says, Ubetach zachor tizkar, you will remember. Masher kvar shamata mimenu harbe pa'amim, you will remind yourself of what you've heard from me many times in the past, and that is, she'ikar hayadus. What is the main objective of Judaism? That's a great question. What are we trying to do? What are our lives all about? Ikar hayadus lios ha'adam batel ledas ha'torah v'chachameha. The point, the objective of Judaism is that a person should learn with humility to subdue themselves, to subordinate myself to the will of God and to the will of the leaders of the generation. Even though sometimes I might have a different opinion. Even though sometimes I might not agree. But if God tells me this is what I should do, that is what I do. If I was constructing a religion, would I tell everybody to go 25 hours on Shabbos without using a computer, without using technology? Probably not. I would say it's very hard for many people. If I was making a religion, would I say once a year you have to fast and you're not allowed to wear shoes and you're not allowed to bathe yourself? I don't know. Maybe I would have my own opinion. But he says, Iker Hayadus, the main objective of what we as Jews do is we make sure to submit ourselves with humility and to say, we understand, God, that your great instruction for our lives and the way that you have taught us to have a meaningful life is greater than any understanding that we can ever have. And therefore, even sometimes I might choose to do differently, the challenge of a Jew is to do that which God expects you to do. And therefore, he warns his son-in-law, on this occasion, in this juncture of your life, what God wants you to do is to listen to his other principle, and that is, please do not fast. Please make sure that you go ahead and you follow the law of the Torah, and that is, do not follow that which your heart tells you to do, but follow that which God expects you to do. Let me just close. I see we're running out of time. I want people to have the opportunity to eat, but let me just close with the following amazing and beautiful comment. There was a rabbi in Bergen-Belsen, Rabbi Yisachar Bernard Davids. If you turn to the second side of the page, you'll see a picture on here that's a very unusual looking picture. And the reason why it's unusual is because...
go as long as you'd like.
We should go straight till next week.
We're here.
I'm back next week for the Lunch and Learn again. So you can tell me what you want to speak about. So we have here a very beautiful passage. And you'll look at it carefully and you'll notice it looks very strange. Scratched out piece of paper seems to be something unusual, and it really is unusual. This is a piece of paper that's in the handwriting of Rabbi Yisachar Bernard Davids, who was one of the Rabbanim who was in Bergen-Belsen in 1944. And he's there with a whole community of Jews from Europe, and obviously we don't have to describe what the situation was like at the time. We all know what it was like. And you look at the following piece of paper, which is his own handwriting. And he says the following. We'll try to understand what this means. He writes, "Lifnei achilas hachametz, before eating the chametz, yomar bekavanas halev, you should say with great concentration, Avinu shebashamayim, my Father in heaven, hine galui v'yadua lefanecha, it is clear in your eyes, sheritzoneinu lasos ritzoncha, that there is nothing that we want more in life than to fulfill your will and to do that which you want us to do. V'lachog ischag ha-pesach ba'achilas matzah. And you know, God, that we want to observe the laws of Pesach the way we are accustomed to observing it, the way we want to, by eating matzah uvishmiras iser ha-chametz, and by being careful not to ingest any chametz. However," he says, "Achal zos dav alibenu, we are all pained by the reality, shehashibud ma'akev osanu, that unfortunately we are being enslaved here in Germany in Bergen-Belsen, va'anachnu nimtzaim b'sakanas nefashos, and we find ourselves right now in a grave danger, and we don't think that we're going to survive, and therefore," he writes, "hinenu muchanim umezumanim." We are now prepared, l'kayim mitzvosecha. This Pesach, when we don't have any matzah, when we have absolutely nothing that we can eat, when we're all going to die from starvation, and the only thing that's being given to us is a few scraps of bread at night. He instructed all the Jews who were with him there in 1944 to say the following prayer before they ate the chametz that year on Pesach. Before they ate the chametz that year on Pesach, they said the following. Hinenu muchanim umezumanim, we are now prepared as we eat our chametz on Pesach, something that we've never done before. Something that pains us so much, but yet we are prepared this year. Lekayim mitzvosecha v'chai bahem v'lo sheyamaz bahem. This year we are prepared not to observe the laws of Pesach, but to observe the laws of v'chai bahem. You instructed us that in conditions like this, we should conduct ourselves differently, and we should follow the principle of v'chai b'hem. making sure to look out for our own lives. And to listen to your words which warn us. And therefore we ask you, God, this year, as we engage in the eating of chametz this night of Pesach, we ask you, we pray to you, that you should give us life, and you should allow us to survive, and you should give us a redemption, that we should be able lishmor chukecha velasos ritzonecha ulaavdecha belevav shalem. Amen. How amazing, how moving, how beautiful. He penned his own tefillah. He penned his own prayer for the Jews in Bergen-Belsen who unfortunately had to eat chametz that year. And obviously the answer was, you have to eat the chametz because you have no choice, you have no option. But when you eat that chametz, ask God in the merit of the other mitzvah that you're observing, in the merit of following His word, of listening to what He instructed you to do, of making sure that you look after your body and soul, in that merit we ask God, Kein techayenu uskaimenu usiga aleinu b'mehera, give us the strength and the fortitude to be able to serve you in the way that you want us to, that we should be healthy and we should be strong. And I said to all the members of the staff in Camp Simcha a few weeks ago, when you get up on Shabbos in the middle of the night and you need to change the battery in that girl's trach, or you need to get up on Shabbos and drive someone to the hospital, or you need to get up and turn on a machine or turn on a feeding tube, and you need to do things that you've never done in your life, you need to turn on a shower and cook hot water and do all kinds of activities that you never dreamt that you would do on Shabbos, I ask them all, keep this in your pocket and say to God, God, you know that this is not the way that I'm normally accustomed to observing Shabbos. But I use this as an opportunity to pray to you on this occasion, that in the merit of the mitzvah that I am doing this week, of observing the Shabbos in this manner, of doing the unusual observance of Shabbos, of making sure that I look after the lives of others, v'chai b'hem v'lo sheyamos b'hem, I ask you, God, please, allow us to be healthy and be strong. Allow us to move on from here and to have a galus and to have a redemption that we won't have to suffer any longer. Use it as an opportunity to implore God for all that you ask for and make it a meaningful experience. Don't feel bad about the fact that this is the way you're observing Shabbos, because under these circumstances, this is exactly what God wants you to do. The Shulchan Aruch writes that a person who is careful to be Mechalel Shabbos when it's necessary, to violate the laws of Shabbos when they have to, when God calls upon you to do so, a person who does that, the Shulchan Aruch says, Hazariz Harezem Meshubach, if you're the first one to run to the scene to take care of what needs to be done, Harezem Meshubach, you are praised. And the Shulchan Aruch then goes further and says, V'hashoel Harezem Shofech Damim. If you start running around and asking questions before running to the hospital, because you just don't know, Harezeh Shofech Damim, says the Shulchan Aruch. That is tantamount to murder. How so? Because you never know. Minutes and seconds count. And you never know. You're going to go running to the rabbi's house to ask him the question, do I have a right to go to the hospital or not? You never know, says the Shulchan Aruch. A person who wastes time on Shabbos asking these kinds of questions, Harezeh Shofech Damim, you never know what it could lead to. Everyone has to be very careful. But then the Shulchan Aruch goes one step further and he says, in the name of the Talmud Yerushalmi, V'hanish'al, and the rabbi who is asked, Hareze Megune. The rabbi who is asked is also a bad person. And the question is, what did the rabbi do wrong? I was just presented with a question. What did I do wrong? Why is it my problem? And my father told me on many occasions the answer is, because if you have people in your community who you have not educated about how they should conduct themselves on Shabbos, if you didn't think that it was a priority to teach the members of your community, first and foremost, how careful they need to be with dealing with other lives on Shabbos and how they should never hesitate to take care of what needs to be done, it means you're not doing a good job as the rabbi. And it's a condemnation on the leader if he or she doesn't make sure to go out of their way to educate the people that this is what needs to be done on Shabbos should the situation present themselves. So I hope that through today's class, I hope that through today's discussion, we have at least educated ourselves a little bit, and we have at least thought in a more critical way about what it is that we need to do when Shabbos is really on the line, and how we need to make sure that we tend to those who are sick, and we make sure not to try and be machmir. This is not the place where we should have chumras. Like we said before, the Rishonim say, somebody who chooses to be machmir, somebody who chooses to keep the laws of Shabbos instead of breaking them when they have to be broken, hareza chasidus shel shtus. You don't get credit for that. That's a mistake. It's not something that God's proud of. It's a tremendous mistake. It's not a risk that should be taken. So we've begun a discussion about this. I hope next